T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Show's going by so fast. We've had an absolutely packed show. We talked Falcons first hour. Got into some MLB rule changes in hour number two. And, of course, a little bit of college quarterback talk. And now, I tease this at the very beginning of the show, we're going to talk about the top 25 NFL coaching list came out. And Dan Quinn's in a very interesting spot. Really quickly, though, the Boston Celtics went to Oracle Arena tonight and absolutely obliterated the defending champs by 33. And it wasn't close the entire game. Gordon Hayward, who's come underneath a lot of fire because he came back too early from his injury, he had 32 tonight. So keep an eye on the Celtics there. They really needed to have a big game because they've been sliding. They're like fifth place in the East. And Jason Tatum and company had a huge night and just took Golden State to the woodshed. I think quickly, and we're going to talk football, but quickly, this is your year to go get Golden State. And this is their most gettable year, in my opinion, in recent years. The East is as loaded as it's ever been, and there are two or three or maybe even four teams that I think strike a lot of fear into Golden State. Boston is one of them. Philadelphia is another one. And a healthy Rockets with James Harden is also a number one. I think a motivated Russell Westbrook, because he hates Kevin Durant's guts, and an MVP-level Paul George could cause trouble as well. There's four teams right there that the Warriors are going to have a problem playing, and they're going to be facing two of those in the Western Conference playoffs. So Golden State, it's not inconceivable that they could miss the NBA Finals again. It's kind of a hot take. I'm not saying it will happen, but there's always a chance. But just to be sure, reiterate, Boston obliterates Golden State at Oracle Arena tonight. All right, let's get to this article here. This one was on rotoworld.com. And if you don't know what RotoWorld is, because I sure did not, it's an NBC, like, affiliate writing area. Pretty popular. Talk about sports. And the headline is, apparently this guy Patrick Daughtry does this every single year, the NFL's best coaches in 2019. Again, if you want to get on the conversation here, 404-741-0929. I'm Thomas Mott, at Real Thomas Mott on Twitter. And Marshall Parker, at Marshall Parker underscore, M Parker underscore radio. Excuse me, is the Twitter handle there. Here's the list. Let's start off, before we tell you where Dan Quinn is, go ahead and guess, think about it, how high you think Dan Quinn is. Because he is, remember, it's just a top 25, okay? So he is on the list. He is one of the top 25 best coaches. I think any coach who was recently hired this offseason doesn't count. So like the Browns' new head coach, the big, I forget his name, but he's not on the list. Number one. Not a surprise is Bill Belichick. Number two is Andy Reid. Okay, that's fine. A little bit of problems at three and four. Sean McVay is at three, and he's above Doug Peterson, which to me is totally wrong. Sean McVay has never beaten Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson has beaten Sean McVay every single head-to-head matchup and has really had his number. It's proven fact, when you have a good coach who can game plan the Andy Reids, the Bill Belichicks, the Doug Petersons, they can watch the film and they can go get Sean McVay. If you have a younger coach who's not that experienced, doesn't know what he's doing, Sean McVay's kind of motion and movement and actions can kind of get you. But if you're a good head coach, you can go get Sean McVay. Bill Belichick did it in the Super Bowl. He completely shut down that offense. And Doug Peterson did it twice, back-to-back years, against Sean McVay in Los Angeles. So Doug Peterson should be higher. He should be number three on this list. Keep going, you know, Pete Carroll, Sean Payton's at six, Mike Tomlin's at seven. That one to me might be a little high based on the fact that he's probably part of the problem in Pittsburgh. Still a good coach. I've met Mike Tomlin once at the Baylor Pro Day. I stood next to him. He's a really nice guy, but he's that seven on the list. John Harbaugh, eight, Mike Zimmer at nine. Ron Rivera sits at 10. He's a good coach. I've met him as well. Very nice guy. Anthony Lynn, 11. Matt Nagy, 12. Frank Reich, 13. Remember Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator for the Super Bowl champs 2 years ago, and then was picked up by the Colts. Great hire there. The Colts should be great this year. Notice we still have not said Dan Quinn. We're still going. 14, Bill O'Brien. 15, Kyle Shanahan. 16 is Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott is ahead of Dan Quinn on this list. Sean McDermott's the head coach at Buffalo. He's 15 and 17 at Buffalo. Okay, number 17, it's not Dan Quinn. It's Mike Vrabel, the Tennessee Titans head coach, who's 9 and 7 in 1 year. Here we go. We're getting close. Number 18, it's Jason Garrett. Yes, the top 25 coaches in the NFL, according to this list on RotoWorld, and Mike Daughtry has Jason Garrett at 18, and we have not heard Dan Quinn's name yet. Look no further, though. One more down the list. 19. There he is, Dan Quinn. Bam. Dan Quinn is the 19th best coach in the NFL, according to this article. Number 20, let's just finish him out. Jay Gruden is 20. Doug Marrone for Jacksonville, 21. Matt Patricia is 22 for the Detroit Lions. John Gruden, 23. Pat Shurmur is 24 with the Giants. And Bruce Arians, 24 ends it, and then the next are all the new hires. So Bruce Arians, Vic Fangio, Brian Flores, Adam Gase, Cliff Kingsbury, Freddie Kitchens, there's the Browns guy, Matt LaFleur, and Zach Taylor. So we go back on this list, and we're going down the list. And there he is, Dan Quinn, sitting at 19. Now, he doesn't just give us a list. Mike Daughtry of RotoWorld doesn't just give us a list and then just make us guess why he has it. He says that Dan Quinn, if I can find it here, actually, right here, Dan Quinn firing all his people and letting Kyle Shanahan go raises a lot of questions. Here's what he says. Would Dan Quinn still be coaching the Falcons if not for Shanahan's historic 2016 offense? The answer is likely no, according to this article. Let's keep going. Quinn has had 4 years, an attorney in the NFL, to establish an identity and has yet to do so. The odds that he discovers one in year five are slim. If you're a CEO-style coach, the stock price better be headed one direction, up. The amount of fluctuation under Quinn's leadership suggests that the board will eventually force a change. So that, I mean, listen, we got to be honest. There's probably a little bit of truth here in the fact that Dan Quinn's best season was the Kyle Shanahan year. That was the year they made it to the Super Bowl, and they should have won. And then they ended up losing the game to the Patriots. Yes, 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 we all know. And then Kyle Shanahan leads, and the offense goes down in the dumps. Now, there were injuries last year. We know that. Matt Ryan's aging. We know that. But Dan Quinn has now made himself the defensive coordinator, essentially. He's going to be calling the defensive plays. And this is him going all in on himself. We see coaches do this often. When stuff is not working, Mike McCarthy in Green Bay, for instance. When stuff's not working, you take the play calling abilities, you put it on yourself, and you just go, all right, here we go. It's me or nothing. And Dan Quinn taking the defensive coordinator job, taking the ability and putting it all himself, has set himself up for a make or break year. I think we all could agree on this. Now, he's the 19th best head coach in the NFL. Would you move him up or would you move him down? 404-741-0929 at Real Thomas Mott on Twitter. But I'm curious. I think he's a little bit. I want to move him up. It's hard to, because Jason Garrett sits above him, and I can't stand Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett sits at 18. And Jason Garrett, of course, has been there a lot longer, but I can't stand Jason Garrett. And you can't tell me that Jason Garrett's a quality head coach in this league.
We all know you hate the Cowboys.
I do. No, and I feel like.
And you know what? But seriously, I agree with you here. Yes, I'm a Falcons homer, right. Whatever. I can't believe Jason Garrett's still around.
He just claps.
Yeah.
And
he's Jerry's puppet.
Oh, my goodness. I think this could finally be the year that they're going to let go of Jason Garrett. But to have him above of Dan Quinn, Mike Vrabel to me is a little bit high. Now, he did have a good season, 9-7. That's just one season. I don't know what Mike Daughtry from RotoWorld was drinking / smoking when he wrote this to put Sean McDermott at 16. Sean McDermott's a great defensive coach. He did that in Carolina. But offensively and at the head coaching position, I just don't see him being that big of a guy for the Bills. Now, they hit a home run in Josh Allen. Josh Allen might turn out to be the best quarterback in last year's draft class. Now, there's a lot of good quarterbacks, and Baker Mayfield's fantastic. But Josh Allen took a franchise that's absolutely garbage in Buffalo. Like, I mean, like NFL purgatory. No one wants to go there. Buffalo, New York, right? You're going to freeze to death. You're going to lose to Tom Brady every single year. It's terrible. And Josh Allen gave them some life. But Sean McDermott being ahead of Dan Quinn is rough. But Dan Quinn, sitting at 19, is fair to a point, I think. I mean, like, I would like to move him up, sure. But we can't move him up much further because we know, take out the 2016 season, and Dan Quinn has had a rough go-around. He tried to create the next Seattle because that's where he came from. He basically tried to recreate Seattle. And we see the people do this a lot. They try and recreate the culture. And some people do it very well. Doug Peterson recreated Andy Reid and made him younger and better. But then there are times where you have the Patriots offensive coordinator, whose name escapes me, go to Denver, and he cannot recreate Bill Belichick. And so can Dan Quinn recreate Seattle? No, the answer is no. Will he get fired at the end of this year? The answer is yes, if they don't get to the playoffs and win games. We are going to move along. We got, what, two more segments, and then we're done? Keep it right here. 92.9 The Game. Thomas Mott, don't go anywhere. We're going away. Here on 92.9 The Game, Thomas Mott. Two more segments to go. We have some audio we're going to play about Atlanta United. Their president was on Dukes and Bell this afternoon. But first, I always try to get every single guy who calls in their chance to talk. So, Tony from Marietta, go ahead. You want to talk Dan Quinn in our last segment. Tony, are you there?
Yeah, I am here.
All right, go for it.
First question is, do you want Tom, Tommy, or Thomas?
Let's go with Thomas.
Okay.
Thomas. Yes, sir.
I think Quinn is appropriately placed.
Okay.
I think me as a Bears fan, and I don't want to sound like a homer, I think he's appropriately placed. He inherited a complete disaster in Chicago.
You're talking about Matt Nagy, right?
Matt Nagy.
Yep.
Absolutely. And I think that Dan Quinn has had plenty of time to prove himself right or wrong, and this is going to be the make or break year. And I've been here for 35 years, and my second favorite team is the Falcons. And if he doesn't get it done, then some changes are going to have to happen, because if Blank can get the Atlanta United, soccer team, a championship,
right?
My goodness, I mean, he's the owner of the Falcons.
Yes, sir.
Just chop his head off.
No, listen, I totally agree. Really, thank you for your call there, Tony from Marietta. He makes a great point. Before we go to this audio, Dan Quinn's had his time, right? And the article said it. You have, I mean, 4 or 5 years. That's an eternity for an NFL head coach. That's a lot of time. And Tony's right. Make or break year for Dan Quinn. All right, let's get to this Atlanta United audio. Darren Eales, the president of Atlanta United, was on Dukes and Bell this afternoon, getting us ready for tomorrow's CONCACAF matchup against Monterrey. Take a listen.
Right now, though, on the line, we've got our man. His name, Darren Eales, and he is the president of our Atlanta United. As we get ready to take on Monterrey, guys, Wednesday is the first leg of this match. And, Darren, it's always good to have you on the program, whether you're in studio or on the line. I guess the first thing that we want to start with is our MLS opener against DC United. And in your estimation, what happened in that game? Because, you know, we're watching, and one shot on goal, whether it was one or two, depending on who you talk to, simply was not enough.
Yeah, afternoon, chaps. Yeah, it was disappointing, wasn't it? I mean, trying to take the positives, at least it was half as bad as last year when we lost 4-0. So, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. But, no, I mean, it's disappointing. A week's a long time since I spoke to you guys last. And we obviously had the amazing game at Kennesaw State, which was a really good performance from the team. So I think, you know, we were flying going into that DC game. But, you know, first out, it was awful weather. I mean, it was very cold, rainy, and they're a good team, you know, and I think it was just one of those days, and hopefully, like last season, it's something we'll learn from and bounce back from.
Yeah, Darren, we talked about it yesterday. I was joking with Jason Longshore. I've actually been the voice of reason on this one, believe it or not, talking about that, you know, you're still seeing the synergy, or at least trying to create the synergy, with the middle to the front and trying to get Joseph Martinez more engaged. And, you know, Pity Martinez, they tried to give him the day off. When he got him in, you saw the spark. But why do you think we're just not creating those scoring chances?
Yeah, I think it's it was a little bit of that. Like you said, Petey didn't start the game. We're still getting to know each other in that sort of front three. It's a short preseason, as we said before, on MLS. So I think that's a factor. And I think you'll see it as the season goes on. And again, you know, I'll just go back to last year. You can't sort of take one game in isolation. We saw that last year. But it's about how we bounce back.
Darren, talk to us about this Monterey club and how good they are, because I think Atlanta United fans are going, okay, we got past the first round, but now the test gets a lot tougher.
Yeah, absolutely, Carl. I mean, look, they're number one team at the moment in Mexico. They're certainly the highest payroll, so they're the team that spends the most money on their players. I think they haven't lost to an American team in this tournament in the past. Mm. So, you know, they're a blooming good team. And it's an intimidating place to go. There'll be a big crowd there. Now, you know, one thing we got in our favour, we can just get some sort of result to bring back to Mercedes-Benz next week. They have to play their game against Tigres, which is their big derby match on the weekend. So they won't have the luxury of being able to rest players next weekend. So, you know, I think our job's to go there and just make sure we're still in the tie when we come back to Mercedes-Benz next week.
Again, that's our big arch rivals. Darren Hills joins us here, guys, on the WadeFord.com hotline. You'll hear the game right here on our sister station, WAOK 1380. Go to radio.com. You can get the app. That's how I was listening on Sunday to hear Mike and Jason's call. Darren, the team itself, we know that you're always making moves. You brought in Breck Shea. Is that also kind of a guy learning his way and getting a feel? He was great on Thursday, and he really struggled in D.C.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is a position as well for him in this sort of wing-back position that we're working on him. And you saw the sort of good and the bad. He was fantastic at Kennesaw State, some of his distribution. Obviously, didn't go to plan on Sunday, but to be fair, no one really had a great game. So, he's an experienced player. He's played in Europe. So, we've got great hopes for him in our system.
It is Darren Hills here on the line with us. It's Dukes and Bell. As far as the accommodations down there, can you talk a little bit about it? I mean, are they trying to put you guys in a hut, make things difficult on us, or what?
It'll be interesting, because I remember a couple of years ago when Orlando set the fire alarms off, and I felt that was when we knew that Major League Soccer was really becoming, you know, a top sport in America, because that's what you get when you're on the road in Champions League. So I'm waiting for us to get woken up tonight by their supporters with a fire alarm. So I'll have to report back to you tomorrow.
Darren Hills, president of Atlanta United FC, with us here talking about United and the CONCACAF. This is also something that I know that DeFrank DeBoer tried to give some guys off the night, because you've got to try to fit in all these matches. It's a very compressed schedule. But I mean, what are you looking for? What's realistic goals before you kind of catch your breath with the international break?
Well, look, we've got to obviously pick our points in the league. We can't afford to have too many more slip-ups. But I think in, you know, CONCACAF here, I mean, we got through that first round and we dug ourselves a bit of a hole, and, you know, it was a superb performance from the players to get that first goal after 47 seconds and then the second after 8 minutes, and, you know, to get that 4-0 win was really important to us, because, you know, we wanted to give ourselves the best chance in this tournament. But now we're coming up against probably the best team in the tournament. So, you know, if we could find a way, like I said, to get back next week, still with a chance in the game, and then hopefully in front of our amazing fans, we can lift the guys and we can cause that, what would be an upset. You know, if we win this game, we're definitely the underdogs.
You know, Darren, I came in and Monday, I know a lot of people wanted to react, and I know you saw it with United fans. And, you know, I said, listen, this is a long season. And, you know, for us, I think we're a little spoiled simply because we saw our team not only win it all last year, but playing our, you know, the best soccer late into the year. And then we turn right back around and here we are in the spring. And I think we're expecting to see that same club. So, you know, what would be your words to United fans to say, hey, I know it's kind of been up and down to get things started here, but we're playing, you know, in a tournament that we haven't participated in Champions League and obviously the MLS side of things. What would you say to United fans?
Well, look, I mean, I'd say that's what football's about. That's what soccer's about. You get the ups and downs. I mean, last season was the most amazing season, but now, let's not forget, we lost 4-0 our first game at Houston in the season. In our last game of the season, we were awful against Toronto. So, you know, that's what happens. We're not dealing with robots, with players, there's different circumstances. But the reality is, it's about, you know, over a season, where do you finish at the end of that season? So, you know, it's frustrating for me as well, but you just got to remember, this is the nature of soccer. And it's one of those games where a goal can make such a difference. You know, we were looking pretty good at the end of the first half against DC. He shouldn't have been in a corner. The ref gives a corner. Time had already expired, but he let them have the corner, and you go in 1-0 down, and that changes the whole state of the game. So, you know, it's one match. It's not the end of the world, and, you know, we've got a lot of soccer to play.
No, we agree with you. We talked about it on Monday. It was just a backbreaker, and it was like three corner kicks in a row. With a team that's pretty good on set pieces, that's tough. By the way, do you think we need some improvement with our defending the set pieces?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we're certainly stronger in terms of, you know, now we've got Miles Robinson at the back there, who's great at winning the ball, but it's obviously something that, you know, we need to work on. It's probably been the way the teams have tried to
the score against us in the past, and it's always going to be something that people try to focus on. So I'm sure that's something Frank's going to be working on throughout the season.
Darren, when you acquired Breck Shea, what did you see that you thought he could really come in and help our club with? We saw him shine in Kennesaw, and then I didn't know, you know, I really didn't think he had a great match the other night on Sunday. What did you see that you really thought his skill set was going to help us with?
Well, I think it's what you saw, Carl, in the game on Thursday, because, you know, he's got that ability to, he's got great possession with the ball, and in that game his crossing was phenomenal, and the way that he was finding the players. He gives us that height, so when we talk about set pieces, it's another body that we have in the area that can match up with his height. So, you know, for us, it was that all-around game that he's got. It's really everything he did Thursday, and look, everyone had a tough game on Sunday, so I wouldn't just pick Breck out. I think everybody, to a man, you know, could have played better, and that's what they'll be striving to do this week, because we've got, obviously, a huge game against Monterey, but then we've got our home opener in front of a full stadium, and we've got to make sure we get 3 points there.
Hey, Darren. Darren Neal's with us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Heads right down to Mexico to take on, again, Monterey here at Right Here, 1380 on Radio.com, our sister station here for your home of United. Darren, what's the story on Franco Escobar? How soon can we see him back out there?
Hopefully sooner rather than later. So, you know, he's coming back. He's been doing some training on his own. It's important with this one. We don't want to sort of risk him back too early, because it's one of those shoulders where, you know, if you do bring it back too early, then we just have a setback. So we'll make sure we take it cautiously, but, you know, it's going to be sooner rather than later, which obviously is going to be great for us.
We talked a little bit about Mercedes-Benz. We hadn't had a chance to talk to Rich McKay or anybody from the Falcons about it, so we wanted to ask you about the cashless Mercedes-Benz and how that might affect United fans. I know that news just hit. Is it something you guys have been working on?
Yeah, look, it's something, again, we're always trying to focus on how can we make the fan experience better, and going cashless gives us that chance to really speed up transactions. So, you know, again, it goes to lines. We spectate it in soccer, where everybody wants to come at halftime. It gives us that ability to serve quicker. People get their food and drinks quicker. So it's all about that fan experience. And then, you know, we do have 10 reverse ATMs. So if you do only have cash, then you can put that in and get a Visa debit card that you can use anywhere. So it's going to be something that, you know, we're really excited for the stadium in terms of improving the fan experience. We're going to be the first game, so we're trying to make sure we get the word out so people aren't caught on the hop. But, you know, you can do it with your Apple Pay or with your credit cards. And again, it's going to be something that's just going to hopefully keep increasing the bar and the standard of service. And as you saw, we also got a chance to reduce some prices, even with the hot dogs down to $1.50, which is,
right,
you know, unbelievable value.
Darren Neal, before we let you go, just to recap again, guys, taking on Monterey, CONCACAF, this is Champions League. It's big. Darren touched on it. These guys don't lose to U.S. teams. Do you think we'll be aggressive? You think they'll be aggressive? Style makes the fight. What's it going to look like in the first 30 minutes?
Yeah, look, I think they're going to be at home. I think they're going to be aggressive and come at us. I think we've just got to be ready to try and weather the storm in our first 20, 25 minutes. I think that'll be the plan. You know, if we can get through that first perhaps half an hour and then sort of take it from there. But like I said, we've always got to remember, a bit like the game that we played against the Costa Rican side, it's two legs. So we've got to hang in there and not get sort of too gung-ho. We don't have to go out there and win the game in Monterey. We've got to make sure we don't lose it so that we can't give ourselves a chance in the Mercedes Benz.
Darren, be safe. We look forward to seeing what our club's going to do. And, of course, we'll be watching and listening right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. As Mike mentioned, again, guys, the match is going to be on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Darren, thank you so much.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot.
You
That's
too.
Our man, Darren Neal. And as we said, guys, I know Monday, and I guess the good news is, Carl, we are a pro soccer town. And I know, guys, you don't really follow soccer and you struggle with it. We hope you have some patience with us, because we try to, you know, not dumb it down too much, because we just love it and we're passionate about it. But it's so hard right now to get a handle on where this team is, and I get that. But let's just have some perspective, okay? I know DeBoer is not Tata. Things are different. 3-4-3, yeah. The way guys have looked. We got good Shea, we got bad Shea, okay? We're still waiting to see Petey. I think they expect this guy to come out and look like Pele in the movie Victory. It's going to get there, but it's going to take a minute. It might take this whole month to finally get our, you know, get our new equilibrium.
Darren Neal's presented by Aaron's Guys, perfect for your budget and style with top name brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. It is Aaron's, and they bring you Darren Eels. I hope I hope we see more of what we saw in Kennesaw tomorrow night than what we saw on Sunday night.
Well, those guys, they, you know, as we said, they came out with energy against us that first night. And don't forget, I'll just tell you now, don't throw objects at your television. This is CONCACAF. CONCACAF refs, it'll be a referee who's not from America or not from Mexico. So that leaves the rest of Central America and the Caribbean. So don't expect any calls, right, Craig, down in Monterey? I mean, if you're looking for a 50-50 ball, that's forget it. You got to watch out. Watch out for the yellows, and just you're not going to get any calls on Wednesday night.
Number three, our final segment, 1:42 p.m. Eastern Time. Thomas Mott sitting in with my producer, Marshall Parker, and we are about to wrap this show up. Well, we got one more segment. We're not going to wrap it up just yet. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in so far. Again, final segment, the call number 404-741-0929. Again, at Real Thomas Mott on Twitter and at mparker_radio is the way to tweet at us during the show and also not during the show. Tweet to me during the day, and I will most likely tweet back. Again, the final segment, I was trying to look around. I've been trying to figure out if I could give y'all some names of some people the Falcons could target later on in the draft, right? Because everyone talks about Ed Oliver, right? We keep hearing Ed Oliver, DeAndre Baker, perhaps Jonah Williams, the tackle. Right, Marshall, like these are the names that we've been hearing nonstop. But what are some other names that could possibly be on the radar for later rounds? Because later round picks, we all know, can be very important. Because you can hit on a fourth round pick, a fifth round pick, and either way, you get a better value if you can hit the third rounders, hit the second rounders. So the Falcoholics helped me out here with a list of hidden gems the Falcons may consider by Eric J. Robinson. This one came out, I believe, a couple days ago. The first one on the list is Matt Marshall will recognize this, the Georgia tight end, Isaac Nada. So that could be a later round target.
That would be a great addition.
Yes. I mean, he's huge, right? 6'3", 224 pounds. He's physical. He was slower at the combine. Now, he wasn't slow in terms of a 6'3", 244 pounder, but he was slow in terms of the other tight ends in the class. I think Faint, the tight end, they have two tight ends at Iowa that were ridiculous at the combine and are going to be in the late first, early
and they were,
second round.
Aren't they? I think I saw their 40s.
They were sub 5. They were like 4. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to look it up real quick because it was insane. It was Noah Faint 40 time. I should have had this before. He ran a 4.50, which is ridiculously fast for how big he is. And I think they might have got it down to a 4.47 unofficial time was the one for it's either Font or Faint. I mean, I honestly could not tell you. I did not watch a lot of Iowa Hawkeye games. The only one I actually did really tuned into is when they absolutely beat down and took, beat the brakes off of Ohio State, which I really actually enjoyed watching that happen.
Anytime Ohio State goes down,
they just absolutely obliterated them, too. It was like it wasn't even close. And then even then, Ohio State is Ohio State, so they were still considered to be possibly in the Final Four, even though they shouldn't have been after that loss, but that's neither here nor there. The next guy on the list, it's an offensive end. It's Jalen Ferguson. If you've never heard of him, he's from Louisiana Tech. I actually got to see this guy play in person once because Louisiana Tech played Baylor. So Conference USA, he was the Conference USA Division Defensive Player of the Year. And he actually is the NCAA all-time leader in sacks with 45 in his career. He played all 4 years for the Bulldogs down there in Louisiana Tech. He's a 4-year starter, so he's matured. He's grown up. He won't be going to the first round. He probably won't go in the second round, but you can get him in a later round. And listen, the Falcons need pass rushers. They need pass rushers who aren't named Vic Beasley and who aren't named Tack McKinley. You got to add someone else to the rotation. We've been talking about this, whether it's Justin Houston. But Justin Houston is going to be expensive. We said that early on. I think he was going to be paid $17 million this year, and the Chiefs said, no, thank you. He's still going to command $13 or $12 or $14 million. That's the market set by Brandon Graham when he re-signed with the Eagles. And so you could go to the draft and get a guy in a rookie deal like Jalen Ferguson and bring him in and pair him up with Tack and pair him up with Vic and pair him up with Grady and maybe pair him up with your first rounder, Isaiah Oliver. And suddenly, if you have a Ferguson, Tack, Beasley, Grady Jarrett, Ed Oliver, you're rotating all those guys in, we have a pass rush that goes from bottom of the league this past year to really being one of the best in the NFL. Listen, I mentioned Philadelphia a lot. I think you need to look at the past Super Bowl teams and kind of copycat and do what they do best. The Eagles, what they did best during their Super Bowl run, and really last year too, is they have a ton of pass rushers. They don't just have four. They have 5, 6, 7, 8. They throw in Derek Barnett. They throw in Chris Long. They throw in a guy like Michael Bennett. And they just rotate and rotate, and the guys stay fresh. So that way, it's fourth quarter, and you can keep a guy like Grady Jarrett in, but then you're rotating in the defensive end, so that way they're always healthy. They're not healthy. Well, that's good, but they're always not tired and can really go get the quarterback late in the fourth quarters. That's one of the reasons the Eagles were so good in 2016. And, oh, hey, their one big sack in that game came late in the fourth quarter of Super Bowl 52 when Brandon Graham finally beat his man around the edge because he was fresh and got the strip sack on Tom Brady. So a great play. I mean, Jalen Ferguson sounds great. They also mentioned a wide receiver as we're continuing on the list of potential players to wow your friends with and say that the Falcons could draft in later rounds. Because, again, we only talked the first round, but the later rounds matter too. The wide receiver, Emmanuel Hall, is the next guy here, the Missouri wide receiver. Now, listen, you can take Emmanuel Hall for what he is, but there are a ton of good receivers in this draft class. Now, there is no Julio Jones or Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham. This is not the draft class where one guy stands out who's going to be an elite guy who's going to be picked in the top 10.
I like Mecole Hardman.
Yeah, and Mecole Hardman, if you throw him to the list, right, another Georgia guy. There are so many good wide receivers that could eventually be great in this draft to the point of you could wait and fifth, sixth round, they're still going to be wide receivers. So you could get Emmanuel Hall, you could get Mecole, you could get anyone else. And listen, yes, we have Julio. Yes, we have Calvin Ridley, but you can never have enough good young wide receivers. And Julio's getting older, right? I mean, Julio's still great. They're going to extend him. But 3 or 4 years down the line, you could be grateful that you went and got someone in this year's draft. The final one, another Georgia player. It's actually Elijah Holyfield. So we go through the list here.
He could be a really good value since he did not really have that great of a showing at the combine.
Right.
Like, as far as, like, especially as far as his 40 was concerned.
His 40 was awful. It was like, I think it was a 4.97 or a 5 flat. It was very slow. He was strong. He threw up the most bench reps. I think he threw up, was either 26 or 36. I think it was 26, because 36 would be ridiculous. He's a physical back. He fits the mold size-wise, and he's strong. I compared him, because I was curious. I was like, okay, let's see what Elijah Holyfield's combine numbers were compared to, like, Marshawn Lynch, LeGarrette Blount, you know, big physical backs. And Marshawn Lynch and LeGarrette Blount were way faster. They ran in the 4.6s, okay? So you think about that, and you're like, okay, well, Elijah Holyfield's really slow, but Holyfield did put up about twice as many reps at 225, which makes you think he's a stronger guy. And you listen, he's not going to be the feature back, but with Devontae Freeman's injury history, and you could go get a guy like Elijah Holyfield later on in the draft, then you could have a good 1-2 punch, because I think we all agree, and many people are saying, that Tevin Coleman probably won't be coming back. And having two backs and being able to rotate backs is a big thing in the NFL now. What team really has one solid back that they keep pounding the rock and they really don't rotate off of? Everybody has a 1-2 combination, right? Jordan Howard, Tevin Coleman. I mean, technically, it was supposed to be Le'Veon Bell, and then the backup, I always forget the guy out of Pitt's name. Good. Cameron. Oh, no, James Conner. There it is. James Conner. Right? A 1-2 punch. Philadelphia rotates a whole bunch of backs. So you look at a guy like Elijah Holyfield in a running backs class that, to me, is also very strong. I mean, Montgomery out of Iowa State is really good. Memphis has a pair of running backs that you could go pick up. There's a lot of opportunities later in the rounds. And again, everyone watches the first round, and as soon as they draft whoever it is at 14, whether it's Ed Oliver or someone else, we're going to be debating it and breaking it down and doing interviews on it. You'll have all of it here at 92.9 The Game. But the interesting ones are going to be those later round picks, because those can matter. And when you look at teams that are able to build championship teams, a lot of times it happens because you are able to draft well in later rounds. You look at the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, they got talent from late, late rounds. Antonio Brown was a fifth round pick, right? I mean, if you can get some good guys later. Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, these guys were not first round draft picks. They were later on in the draft. If you can hit on them, then it gives your team all sorts of ability to really, I mean, contribute now.
Well, and I also don't think that Elijah Holyfield's 40 time is the end-all, be-all.
No, I don't either.
Because I think he's faster than that 40. I think he just had a bad 40.
And he actually came out and said, they interviewed him, and he was like, listen, that is not where I wanted to be. He's going to run it again at the Georgia Pro Day. Listen, the Pro Day is really the place to shine. I covered two pro days while I was at Baylor. They script everything. It's your guys. It's your stadium. It was your bed the night before. You're not tired. It's the perfect place to shine. So Holyfield could easily go out and get it down to a 4-7.
Well, and that mental strain of being at the combine,
yes,
and like knowing all those different eyes are on you. Like even it's the like you almost if you're a player, you almost have to watch out for the people that aren't actually watching you.
Yeah.
Because those are the people that are really watching.
Yes, exactly. And most of the time, you have, I mean, scouts from every single team is going to be there. I mean, while I was at Baylor, the Corey Coleman year, we had Mike Tomlin and Bill O'Brien from the Texans. So scouts are there, head coaches are there. The pro day is your place to shine. We got one more quick break. Then we're going to wrap up my third solo show ever, 929 The Game, and send you to Amy Lawrence of the National Network. Keep it right here, though. We're not going away for another 8 minutes. 929 The Game. Good song. This is like my childhood. Back here on 929 The Game, Thomas Mott, our final little quick segment before we're out at the top of the hour and sending it to the CBS Sports National Network and Amy Lawrence. You know, my dad was a fighter pilot.
That's awesome.
It was super cool when I was a kid. He was a fighter pilot and we got to go to the runway and sit in the cockpit. It was in the Air Force and, of course, Top Gun's Navy. But this is really the only good fighter pilot movie ever made. And, of course, they're making Top Gun 2. This is like...
I feel like they've been making Top Gun 2 for like 10 years.
Well, it's like official. Like, they're actually going to have it in 2020. But we watched this as kids. I mean, this is as good as it gets. Tom Cruise and Top Gun 2. I met a guy who was in the Top Gun bar scene when he's singing to the girl. I forget what the girl's name was in Top Gun. I just know she's...
Kelly
like,
McGillis.
Yes.
You never close
that
your
one.
Eyes.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Yes. I met a guy who was in the bar scene. He was a fighter pilot at the Navy base where they shot it in San Diego, and they said all the fighter pilots were extras, and so it's really cool. Man, being a fighter pilot would be really fun. I always wanted to be one as a kid, and then I decided to talk for a living.
Well, my eyes are bad, so like that would never work. Although is your dad short?
No, he's like 5'11". He's a little bit taller than I am.
Okay.
My brother, though,
I always had the impression that, like, fighter pilots were on the shorter side.
They need to be, because, like, the cutoff to be a fighter pilot is, like, 6'4", because, like, you can't fit in the cockpit. My brother's 6'3", and he went to the Air Force Academy as well. He flies a cargo plane, and he barely fit. He was just on the edge of being big enough to fit. That's about it for us, as we're going to wrap it up and send it to Amy Lawrence. A great show, number three. Thanks to all the callers. We had a really, really good show. They don't have me scheduled on Wednesday or Thursday this week. I'm back on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday at this hour. I will be back on, so keep it right here. Listen, this show is going to become something really cool, and I appreciate everyone listening because it's been fun.
Yeah, it has.
I know that we're on later, but I know you guys are working late, and I have no problem with that. I want to give you guys the best sports talk show I can for this hour. So,
Dwayne Walker the next two nights these time slots.
And then me 5 straight nights again. Hope you guys had a great show. Enjoy the rest of your now Wednesday. We'll see you on Friday. Don't go anywhere. Here's Amy Lawrence.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.